Morning, everyone. I thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf, and we learn L'Zeich Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. Today's Daf in Rosh Hashanah is Daf Chaf Vav. Okay, we are finally moving on to the topic of shofar. If I would ask you at one point in time earlier in the Masechta, so what's Rosh Hashanah about? So you'd say shofar. So you'd be right, but only a fraction right. We are already on the 26th Daf of the Masechta. We're in the third Perek. And now, only now, do we discuss the mitzvah of shofar. Instead of discussing when and where, so right now the first question that we're going to be dealing with is what? What is the shofar? Now, meaning physically, meaning what shofar do we use? Okay, if anyone wants to see a shofar being made, they have you got to go back to elementary school, I think. They bring a shofar, they show you how they hollow it out. Anyway, I know very little about it. But the...
YouTube.
Okay. So, you can actually see. Yeah, never. I forget. Nowadays, you can find out anything. So, you can actually see the shofar being made. So, but anyway, the Mishnah over here discussed the shofar. Yesterday, we started the new perek. And for an odd reason, which I don't have an explanation for, the mission that we dealt with yesterday was not about the shofar. It was a continuation of the discussion of Rosh Chodesh. So I don't know why that is, meaning usually the perakim are more organized and more systematic. And so usually what would happen was that little bit of Mishnah and Gemara that we did yesterday really belongs in the second perak, to finish up the second perak. So why the third perak opened up with that Mishnah, I don't know. But anyway, but today's a new daf, but really a new topic of discussion in our Masechta, and that's the topic of the actual shofar itself. The Mishnah starts off, called shofar's ksherim. All the shofars are kasher, chutz mishal para, with exception to the shofar the para. So in other words, which shofar can you use from any animal? The Mishnah says you go to any animal, of course, provide the animal has a horn on its head, and you could use a shofar of any animal, except for that of a cow, mimneshu keren, because it is not referred to as a shofar, but it's referred to as a keren. So the Mishnah here is making an assumption. Let's just talk about this assumption for just a moment, is that on Rosh Hashanah, so we need a shofar. Okay, you need to actually blow a shofar. So Rashi reminds us that the Torah never actually says that, meaning the Torah never says that on Rosh Hashanah you need a shofar. What does the Torah say when it comes to Rosh Hashanah? You need trua, you need to blow. But the Torah doesn't actually identify what the horn is that you're blowing with. It doesn't say that it has to be an actual shofar. And the Mishnah assumes that we know that, in Rosh Hashanah, it's got to be a shofar. And that's why if the horn of a cow is no good, because the horn of a cow, the Torah never describes as a shofar. It's simply given a different terminology. It's called a keren. Okay, which a keren is also a type of horn, but it's not a shofar, and the requirement is a shofar. So the Rashi says, so if the Torah never describes that we need to use a shofar in Rosh Hashanah, so why is the Mishnah already assuming it has to be a shofar? So Rashi says, well, that we're going to see later on in the Masechta. We're going to see. It's really the tail end of the Masechta, Daf Lamed Daled. Right? Is that the last Daf? Second two. So we're going to see at the end of the Masechta, so the Gemara there is going to tell us that even though the Torah is not clear regarding Rosh Hashanah what you need to use, but the Torah is clear on Yovel. When you get to the 50th year, so you have to blow shofar. And we went through the Pesukim, when do you blow shofar in the 50th year? On the 10th day of that year, meaning otherwise known as Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, so the Torah says that you have to blow shofar. And there the Torah actually uses the description of shofar. And the Gemara later on says that whatever is true for the Yovel, for what we blow on the Yovel year, is also going to be true regarding Rosh Hashanah as well. So on Rosh Hashanah itself, we're going to be blowing shofar, and Rashi tells us that the reason why it's assumed, it is known that we have to blow shofar, is because the Torah there says by Yovel you have to blow shofar, and we have what's traditionally called the Gzeira Shava, which connects the two. Good. So that's just in terms of a working assumption of the Mishnah, it has to be a shofar. And a par is no good, because the horn of a cow is not called a shofar, it's called a keren. To which Amar Rav Yossi, back to the Mishnah, Amar Rav Yossi, v'lo kol shofar nikru keren. So Rav Yossi says, isn't every horn referred to as a keren? For example, he quotes a pasuk, shenamar bimshoch bekeren hayovel. We're going to blow on the keren hayovel. Now let's try not to get confused, even though the Mishnah you hear uses the word yovel, according to the pasuk from Yahushua. The word yovel over here does not mean yovel, meaning the 50th year. Yovel over here means a ram. That's something which the Gemara is going to tell us later on, that the word yovel in this context in Yahushua is referencing a ram. Right, Yahushua Perek Vav, I think we all know, right, when are they blowing on the horns? Okay, as they circle Yericho, right, blowing the horn. But anyway, but the point is that you see that this is a ram. We're talking about that of a ram, and the Torah refers to it as a keren, not a shofar. So Rav Yossi seems to be making an outstanding point, meaning, well, I can't use a cow because the cow's horn is referred to as a keren. Every horn of every animal is referred to as a keren, evident from this pasuk in Yoshua, and Rav Yossi makes an outstanding point, and we don't have a rebuttal. And so that's what we're going to be doing. Half of our day today is working on a rebuttal against the argument of Rav Yossi. So what would the Chachamim say in defense of their position? Okay, good. That's basically the question of the day, or at least takes up half of our day today. What would be the rebuttal in defense of the Chacham? So we start with the Gemara. Shapir Kamar Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, Rav Yossi is making a great point. What would the Chachamim say? So just to organize the Gemara, basically what we're going to have coming up now are three different arguments in defense of the Chachamim. That generally speaking, horns are good. Horns from all animals are good. So you could use the shofar of any animal, with exception to that of a cow. And you can use a cow. Why not? So that's basically what we're going to discuss now for at least the first amud of today's daf. What is wrong with the horn of a cow? So Shapir Kamar Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi seems to be making an outstanding point. V'rabanan. So here is now defense number one. There are going to be three of them all together. So number one, V'rabanan kol shofar sikru shofar vikru keren. When it comes to all horns, actually it goes by two names. In other words, the Torah describes it as a shofar, and the Torah also describes it as a keren. Depara keren ikre. Shofar la ikre. But when it comes to a para cow, so the Torah refers to it as a keren, but the Torah does not refer to it as a shofar. Dechsiv, and how do I know this? The Torah says, Bechor shoro hadar lo, v'karnei re'im karnav. Because the Torah describing the shore says, Bechor shoro hadar lo, this is by the Zos HaBracha, so this is by Yosef, if I'm not mistaken. So Bechor shoro hadar lo, v'karnei re'im karnav. So you see the word kerem in describing the horn of a shore, of an ox. So Rav Yossi amalacha depar nami ikrei shofar. So Rav Yossi says, what do you mean? If we're talking about a cow, it's also referenced as a shofar. How do I know that? Dichsiv. So we're going to have a pasuk in Tanakh, which also is going to describe the horn of a cow, also that is a shofar. Vatitav Hashem, Mishur Par. It is more pleasing to Akash Baruch Hu, pasuk in Tehillim. It is more pleasing to Hashem than that of a shor par. Now, shor and par are basically the same thing. Shor, an ox. Par, an ox. Bull, ox, however we describe it. But basically it's the same thing. So the Torah, so the Gemara itself is bothered by just the language used in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Excuse me. Im shor lama par, vim par lama shor. Well, why would the Torah describe the two? And as Rashi points out, it's really the same thing. If you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi says, what can we note as being the difference between the word shor and the word par? B'yom nishenikra shor hayagadol. I'm sorry, I know that's Rashi coming up later on, but I'm just looking at the later, in that Rashi a little bit later on, just to give us a little definition. Shor ben yom akari shor, meaning when you have a bull. So I know in our language, when we say the word shor and I say the word bull, you think of an older animal, a more mature animal. But Rashi says the word shor itself could be referring even the day that the bull is born, it could be referred to as a shor. And as far as a par is concerned, so eno nikra ad ben shalosh. Par in Chumash refers to a cow, but a older cow, bull. An older bull, a more mature bull. So Rashi says 3 years of age. Okay, good. So, but basically it's the same thing. The shor is a young bull, par is an older bull. So now let's go back to the pasuk in Tehillim. It doesn't make sense. Vatitav Hashem, it's better to God. It's more pleasing to Akadosh Baruch Hu mishur par. So again, the Gemara asks, "Im shor lama par, v'im par lama shor, ela my shor par shofar." So what you could do is you could take the word shor par. Why would David HaMelech put the two words together? So we can actually contract those two words and we can create the word shofar. Now, okay, that requires a little bit of drush in order to do that. It doesn't actually spell out the word shofar. We have a resh. The resh has to be transplanted. Okay, so a little bit of surgery is necessary in order to do this, but still, the Chachamim will tell you that, I'm sorry, yeah. Rabbi Yossi will tell you that that's where you see that we're talking about the horn of a cow, in this case a bull, and still the Torah and the Torah Tanakh, the Navi, refers to it as a shofar. And it comes out now that according to Rav Yossi, again, this is Rav Yossi's position, that even the horn of a cow is acceptable. Now, the Rabbanan Kedra Rav Masna, Damar Rav Masna, Maishur Parshu, Gadol Kepar, and Rav Masna, and the Chachamim say, no, that's not what we'll do. Why does the Navi use the word Shur Par? To tell us that even though Shur could be used for a young animal, at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it, it was as big as a par, as a mature bull. Okay, that is all approach number one. So again, question of the day. Let's try to defend the Chachamim. Rav Yossi, the Chachamim's position is you could use a horn from any animal. Doesn't matter, with exception to that of a cow. Why can't I use that of a cow? So the Chachamim say, because the Torah doesn't describe it as a shofar, it describes it as a keren. Rav Yossi's counter-argument, every horn of every animal is also referred to as a keren. How can that be an exclusionary term? And so now, basically, we're defending the Chachamim. So defense number one of the Chachamim, I can't assign a name to it because the Gemara just says it. Doesn't quote an Amara. But defense number one of the Chachamim is every horn of every animal goes by the name Shofar and goes by the name Keren. With exception to that of a cow, only Keren, not Shofar. Okay, that's number one. Ula Amar. We're on Chavav Amar Alpha, right in the middle of the Amud. It's the first word in the line. Ula Amar Hainatamid, the Rabbanan Kedrav Chista. So another defense of the Chachamim is that of Rav Chista. Dam Rav Chista, Mimnei Ma'in Kohen Gadol Nichnas Bebig Gezav Lefnei V'Lefnim. Okay, this is what I would call a more popular approach. I think people tend to know more this approach more, and that is, look, the Kohen Gadol when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, which only does once a year on Yom Kippur. So what is he wearing? He's not wearing his Big Day Kahuna. Why not? Well, the answer is very simple. Because the Torah says so. The Torah says that when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he wears white. But good, the Torah says so. But can we try to understand that a little bit better? So the Gemara says, yeah. So when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, so he's wearing white, meaning that he's not wearing his normal Big Day Kahuna. Now a Kohen Gadol wears 8 begadim. A regular Kohen wears 4 begadim. What are the additional begadim worn by the Kohen Gadol? So a lot of them are made up of gold. The head plate that's worn by the Kohen Gadol is made exclusively of gold, except for the ribbons that tie it to the back of his head. As is the choshen, has gold and jewelry on it. Okay, so the begadim are made out of gold, of the Kohen Gadol. So why can't he wear it into the Kodesh Kodashim? Lavad avodah lefishe in kategor nase sanegor. So the Gemara says, because the kategor, your prosecutor, cannot become your defendant. What does that mean, prosecutor? It means over here in this context, the egel hazahav, the golden calf. I'm sure everyone here is familiar. Okay, as we were waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down from Har Sinai, he went up there for 40 days. Shavuos is tonight. I think we can all agree. So that was Mamad Har Sinai, and then immediately after Mamad Har Sinai, so Moshe goes up and gets the Torah. So, right, everyone understand that we didn't get the Torah in Shavuos, right? It's one of those things that I think we're right. Generally speaking, people get a little bit confused about it. Right, we didn't get the Torah on Shavuos, Maimon Har Sinai, that was the revelation, that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to the Jewish people in Mass. And he told them the Aseret HaDibros, although they asked if they could please stop at 2. I didn't mean that as a joke, meaning that was that actual. Meaning, okay, we heard enough from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, you tell us the rest. The And the Gemara Makos right tells us, how do we know there's 613 mitzvahs in the Torah? So because Torah Tziv Alana, this is the Gemara in Makos. So the Torah Tziv Alana Moshe. So Kadosh Baruch Hu taught us the Torah. The word Torah in Gematria adds up to 611. So then we're 611. That's too short of 613. So Torah Tziv Alana Moshe. Moshe taught us 2 of the mitzvos. Sorry, Moshe taught us 611 of mitzvos. Where do the other 2 come from? That's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is Lucha number 1. I'm sorry, Dibra number 1 and Dibra number 2. Okay, good. Anyway, so the Shavuos is revelation, and then what happens after Shavuos is that Moshe goes up to the mountain and learns the Torah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and comes down afterwards after 40 days with the Torah. 40 days later, Moshe doesn't come down, at least based on what we thought was 40 days later. And so what do? We make an egel. We make a golden calf. Okay. Moshe comes down, and what does he do? He breaks the luchos. And all this occurs on what date, what calendaric date? 17th day of Tammuz, absolutely correct. Right, that's 40 days afterwards. In other words, after Shavuos, 40 days after Shavuos is the 17th day of Tammuz. Okay. So far, so good. We got all the basics down. So the reason why we can't wear the gold, the Kohen Gadol cannot wear the gold while going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is because, in Kategor Nasa Tzenegor, because the gold is going to remind a Kadosh Baruch Hu, really, of course, more us, but it's going to remind a Kadosh Baruch Hu about the Egel Azav, and we can't have the prosecutor become the defendant. So the Gemara says, well, that's interesting. Well, you know, one of the things that goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the blood. Meaning, we went through Yuma recently. So we know that there were two animals that were shechted, and the blood of those two animals are going to be brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. One of them is the blood of the goat, and the other one is the blood of the bull. Bull is a cow. So in other words, we don't want to remind a Kodesh Baruch Hu about the Egel Azav. We're bringing into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur the blood of a cow. Okay, that's a little strange. So the Gemara says, Ikadam par, Hovishtan ishtan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that it went through a transformation, meaning that doesn't serve as a reminder because that's not the original animal. That is just simply a derivative of the animal. It's just the blood of the animal, and that doesn't trigger the memory. So the Haika Aron, the Kaparas, the Kruv. So the Gemara says, now, a Kohen Gadol can't wear gold while going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Gemara says, also odd, because all the furniture in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is gold. The Aron is gold, the Kaparas, the lid is gold, the Kruvim are made out of gold. So we can't wear gold, but meanwhile, when you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so everything there is gold. And oh, by the way, we learned this together. The inner walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim were plated with gold. So, okay. So, anyway, the Gemara's response is, Achote Baal Yakriv Kamrinan. The Gemara says, you're right, of course. Everything in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is gold. But we, the one who is offering, we can't wear gold. Meaning the reminder is, if we try to appease a Kadosh Baruch Hu while wearing gold or while bringing in gold, so that's going to be an affront to Kadosh Baruch Hu. In Kategor Nasas and Eger. Well, just one second. After we get through the Gemara, your question is going to be answered. Va'ika kafu machta. So the Gemara says when we go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so we have a spoon, we have a shovel, right? Remember that scene that we went through in Masechta Yuma, where the Kohen's coming in, he's got a spoon in one hand, he's got a shovel in the other hand. In the spoon is the Ketores, in the shovel is the coals. Okay. So the va'ika kafu machta, chote bal yitna eka aminan. So the Gemara says that is not an affront that doesn't trigger the alarm of in kategor nasa sanegar. It is only when we benefit, right? The Gemara's terminology yitna'eh, we benefit from the gold, meaning the Kohen Gadol can't wear the gold when going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the shovel and the spoon, so that can be made up of gold. Okay, so far, what do we have right now? The prosecutor cannot become the defendant. So the reason why we don't want to use the shofar made up from the para is because para is a female cow, which reminds us of the cow family, the bull cow family, which is going to remind a Kadosh Baruch Hu about the Egel Azav, and we know the principle of is in Kategor Nasa Sanegar. We can't have something which served to us as a detriment to now serve as our defendant. That is the Gemara's argument. And even though the Gemara acknowledges that the Aron, the Kaparas, the Kruvim are made up of gold, and even though the Kaf and Machter are made up of gold, but we can't dress in gold when we go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, and Hedy, we'll get to your question in just a moment. Okay. Fine. But you know what? I understand now that Kohen Gadol does not wear gold when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He wears gold all the other time. In other words, let's apply this principle of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegar. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, no. It's only an affront to Kodesh Baruch Hu in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it doesn't serve as much of an affront. I'm not claiming I fully understand this. Okay, as is many Gemaras, but still, at least the basic idea is that when you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you are as close as we can get again, kal v'yachol to the best of our understanding. And so therefore, it would be an affront to be wearing gold while going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Shekhinah manifests itself
more in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, shofar nami mibachotsu. So the Gemara says, okay, so now with all this stated, now we have basically all the ground rules of ein kateger nasa sanegar, that your prosecutor cannot also become your defendant. And that's why you cannot wear gold when going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And this rule is only going to be an affront when you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now basically, how did this answer the shofar issue? I can't blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah made up from a cow because of ein kateger nasa sanegar. We're not going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to blow the shofar. We blow it outside. In fact, we even blow the shofar outside of Eretz Yisrael. So what's the issue? So here the Gemara gives, right, if you want, one of the lines of the day. Kevan d'lezikaron hu kibifnim dami. So when we're blowing shofar, it is quote-unquote a zikaron. It's reminding a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Again, that whole idea, right, the reminding someone who's omniscient. But right, it serves as a zikaron, it's a reminder. So in other words, it's a direct communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you know what it's like? It's like lifnai v'lifnim. It's like we're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And so therefore, the shofar, even though physically blown outside, but in terms of the way it manifests, it's just like Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that's why it cannot be made up of a cow. The Hatanim Ibn Ishu. Okay, good. So that's now a new approach, a second approach in terms of the defense of the Chachamim. Why can I not use the shofar of a cow? It reminds the Kodesh Baruch Hu of the Egel Azav. Okay. In Kateger Nasus Anegar. So the Gemara says, Hatanim Ibn Ishu Karen Kamar. So the Gemara asks now a really simple question. Why doesn't it say that in the Mishnah? Meaning, if that's really the Chachamim's dissent to why we can't use a horn of a cow, so then the Mishnah is throwing us on a wild goose chase. So the Gemara says, Charvod Kamar. Okay, so the style of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah gives us one reason why the shofar is no good, but truth be told is that there are multiple reasons. Number one, Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar. I find it interesting that the Gemara lists this as number one when this is not the one that's mentioned in the Mishnah. But reason number one why I can't use the horn of a shofar is because Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar. Ve'od, and another reason, Mimneshu Karen. And another reason is because it's not a shofar, it's a Karen. And the Torah demands that in Rosh Hashanah we use a shofar, not a Karen. Ve'rav Yosi. Now, Rav Yossi, who's still arguing, meaning that hasn't changed, so now Rav Yossi has to rebut 2 points of the Tanakhama. So, Amalecha, the Kamar, can't take a Nasa Sanegar, Hanimil Mivnim, Vaishofar Mibachutz. So, let's first rebut the Kateim Kategor Nasa Sanegar. Yeah, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kohen can't wear gold. But Shofar is not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Rav Yossi objects to this idea that the Shofar is like being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, that's rebuttal number one. And number two, v'tika amar mimishu karen, kol shofar not mikra karen. And as far as the karen argument, so again, this one we know already. Rav Yossi would tell you, every horn from every animal is referred to as a karen, so therefore, it's not an exclusionary term, it doesn't exclude the horn of a cow. Okay? So now that is our second approach in terms of why we cannot use the horn of a cow. It's because in kategor nasa sanegar. And finally, approach number three. Abai Amar Hainu Tamai Rabbanan Shofar Amar Rachmana Veloshtaim Vishlosha. A third approach to defend the Chachamim that you can't use the horn of a cow is because the Torah says the word shofar, and when the Torah says the word shofar, it has to be a singular object, one item. It cannot be a composite of one of two or three horns that are put together. And so why would that serve as a problem regarding the horn of a cow? So the Gemara goes on to explain. V'hadapar came into Kai Gilde Gilde Mischazei Kishnaim Ushlosha Shofros. And since the horn of a cow is made up of layers, Rashi describes every year that the cow grows, a new layer grows over the horn. So when you take the horn off of a cow, it looks like, that's the Gemara's language, Mischazei, it looks like you're actually holding two or three horns in your hand. And the Torah says that you can't use two or three. The Torah says you only can use one. So the Mischazei Kishnaim Ushlosha Shofros, it looks like two or three, and therefore it's disqualified. Okay, so this is the third approach within that of the Chachamim, why I can't use the horn of a cow, because it looks like two or three. Now, mind you, just to I'm just being very exact in the way the Gemara is presenting the language. It looks like two or three, meaning even according to the third approach, truth be told, it's fine. Meaning, it's not right. The issue is not what it's called, Karen versus Shofar. The issue is not in Kateger Nasa Sanegar. The issue is that the Torah says you can't use two or three horns. It can only be but one horn that you blow. So it's a little bit interesting that the Gemara over here in the third approach says it looks like two or three, but the truth of the matter is it's really fine. Meaning that this third approach really is a departure from the first two approaches, in that this disqualification as it pertains to the horn of a cow is only a rabbinic disqualification, not actually a psul d'oraisa. Okay? It's so it is, it fundamentally, it's different as well. V'hatanim imeshu karen kamar. So again, the Gemara now goes over the same basic questions that we've asked before. If that's the issue, why doesn't the Mishnah mention that being the issue? The Mishnah again throws us off on a scavenger hunt. So the Gemara says no. Chadavod kamar. So again, the Gemara's answer is no. The Mishnah gives us one reason why it's no good, but the truth of the matter is there are other reasons. Chadad de shofar echad amarachmana velo shnayim v'shlosha shofros. So again, point number one is that it can only be one shofar and it cannot be composite of two or three shofars. V'od mimneshu karen. And on top of that, you know what another issue is that the horn of a cow is referred to as a Karen, not a shofar. And Rav Yossi, now again, Rav Yossi is going to rebut both of these points. So for rebuttal number one is that the horn of a cow is one horn. Yes, it's made up of layers, but so what? It's made up of layers, but the layers grow on top of one another. They're all connected. And since they're all connected, it's viewed as one. It's not. I'm not violating this rule of not two, not three. And udekamar mimneshu karen kol shofar nami kri karen. And again, in terms of the terminology, so every horn of every animal is referred to as a karen. Okay, period. Okay, that ends that section of the Gemara, and that's really the first half of today's daf. And again, just quickly to review, the Mishnah says I can use a horn of any animal, but that of a cow. Why can't I use the horn of a cow? So the Mishnah says because the horn of a cow is not called the shofar, it's called the keren. Rav Yossi in the Mishnah rebuts the Tanakhama. He says no. He says that the horn of every animal is referred to as a keren. And so therefore I don't know why a cow should be excluded. And Rav Yossi disagrees and he says the horn of a cow is not to be excluded. So we now gave three approaches in terms of defending the Tanakhama's position. Approach number one is that every horn is called keren and shofar, except for that of a cow, which is only called a keren, not a shofar. Defense number two of the Chachamim, ein kategor nasa sanegor, that which serves as a prosecutor cannot also be a defendant, and the shofar reminds the shofar of a, if we use the shofar of a cow, it would remind a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and more importantly us, it would remind us of the egel azav, and we can't do that. We can't have the kategor nasa sanegor. And defense number three of the Chachamim is that the horn of a cow is made up of layers, and it looks like we're using two or three shofars. Okay? Ad kan. From here until the Mishnah, on the next Amud, so basically our Gemara is going to serve as a dictionary, a running dictionary. There are terms that are used in the Chumash that sometimes we're not totally sure what they mean. Right? As an example, and the reason why the Gemara is diverging to this topic right now is because the Mishnah quoted the pasuk b'mshoch b'keren ha-yovel. When you blow on the horn of the yovel, what's the yovel? Well, I told you when we learned the Mishnah, it's a ram. How do we know that? So that's point number one in the Gemara that we're doing right now. So we're in the Gemara, we're on Chavav Amud Aleph, we are about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So, my mashma, the hayuvla lishna de dichrehu. How do I know that the word yovel, in the context that where the Mishnah was describing in Yoshua, Perek Vav, is a reference to that of a ram? Right, whenever the Gemara refers to the ram, it just simply says dichra, zachar, meaning a ram is a male animal. I mean, so is a shore, but generally speaking, the dichra is a ram. So, the Tanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa, Amar Rabbi Akiva, kishachu laravya. So Rabbi Kiva says, I took a trip to, well, I guess we can call it Saudi Arabia, right? Somewhere there. How you calling the dichra yuvla? And you know what? When we saw a ram, so I heard the natives, and the natives said, you know what that is? That's a yuvla. Okay. And it's interesting, the Gemara is making an assumption, and we made this assumption many times in the Gemara, and that is that the other languages are rooted in the Hebrew language. Okay, I'm not a linguist, right? I do speak a couple of languages, but okay, that just it's one of the assumptions that the Gemara makes, and here's a perfect illustration, where there's a term that's used in Sefer Yehoshua, Yovel, and then when you go to Saudi Arabia, and you hear the natives who don't speak Hebrew, but they refer to the ram as Yuvla, oh, okay, it's a ram.
Okay. Rashi uses the same argument
in Chumash. Yeah. It's not uncommon. Right? This happens where the assumption is that the other languages.
Not in
Yuvla. Oh, okay. Oh, good. Oh, and you're talking this particular example. V'amar Rabbi Akiva k'shalach la Galia. So I went to Galia, right? Gaul,
France.
Okay, Charles de. So hayukarin l'nida galmuda. So Anita, a woman who was menstruating, so they refer to her as a Gamuda. So my Gamuda, so the Gemara says, and that's a composite of the words Gamula, Da Mibala. She is separated the word Gamula, Rashi says Muvdalas, she is separated from her husband. Rabbi Akiva Kishalach to Africa. So Rabbi Akiva took another trip to Africa. Rabbi Akiva is a world traveler. Saudi Arabia, Africa, France. Okay. So Kishalach to Africa, Hayukarin Lema'akasita. So there was a small coin that was used in Africa. It was a ma'a, right? A sixth of a dinar. And they referred to it as a ksita. L'may nafkamina l'frushay. So the Gemara says, now we understand chumash. Mea ksita da'araisa mea donkey. The mea ksita referred to in the Torah is mea donkey. Okay. The Amar Rabbi Kishalach l'karcheya. Now as long as we're on this discussion. So we had Rabbi Akiva traveling parts of the world. And understanding different terms that are used in Chumash and Navi, and basically, just in other words, becoming a little more worldly and a little more knowledgeable with other languages, he understands things better. So, Rebbe, we're going now. How many generations later? Rebbe Kiva, Rebbe Meir, Rebbe. So this is now three generations later. So I'm Rebbe Kishlach leKarcheyam. So Hayu Karin leMechira Kira. So a sale, a transaction, is referred to as a kira. This isn't such a deviation. All we're doing over here is just simply taking out the mem. Okay? And l'may nafkamina, the Gemara says, and so what? L'frushe. So now the Gemara says, okay, now we're going to understand another pasuk in Chumash. Asher karisi li. I purchased it. This is at the end of Sefer Bereishis, the last parak of Bereishis, where Yosef goes to Parah, and Yosef says, look, please, I have to bury my father. I promised I'd bury my father in Eretz Yisrael. He purchased a plot in Eretz Yisrael, which, by the way, just from our standpoint, it's hard to understand. What does that mean? When Yosef claims that Yaakov purchased a plot in Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't Yaakov who did. It was Avram who did. Okay, so...
Bought it from
Esav, right? That could be... That's the purchase he's referring to. Okay, very good. So anyway, but Asher Karis Dili, okay, that I purchased. So again, now... Without that, I would have been confused. What does that even mean, Asher Karisali? So I'm Rabbi Shimon Malakish Keshlach Letchum Kan Nisharya. So Rabbi Shimon Malakish says that I traveled to this place called Kan Nisharya. Don't ask, I don't know. So Hayukorin Lekala Ninfe. So when a bride over there was referred to as a Ninfe, and Latarnagol Sechvi, and the chicken over there is described as a Sechvi. And the Gemara goes on to explain. It's going to be helpful to us how? So, Lakala Ninfe might cry, Yefeinof Misos Kol Aretz. So, now every time we see the Pasuk in Tehillim, and we see it weekly. So, every time we see the Pasuk in Tehillim, Yefeinof, the right, a beautiful Nof, Misos Kol Aretz. So, what is that? A reference to a Nof? So, now it's a reference to a Kala. So, Vitanagol Sech, Ve'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Yibai Seh Amar Rav Yeshua Ben Levi might cry. Mishas Betuchot Chachma Omina San Lesechvi Bina. So the Pasuk in Eov, okay, now we're going to understand when we get to the 30th chapter in Eov. So now we'll look at this Pasuk and we'll have to have a better understanding. Mishas betuchos chachma elu kalayos. So the shas betuchos chachma is a reference to our kidneys. The Gemara assumes that a kidney, we look at the kidney, and you know, we modern people, so we think of the kidney as a filtering. Okay, filters the blood. Great. The Gemara's understanding is that the kidneys provide for us advice. They advise us. The kleios is what provides the advice to the person. Okay, so I understand biologically it doesn't work out so well, but That is the way the Gemara always understands the kidneys. Omina san le sechvi bina zutarnagol. And the sechvi having bina having an understanding, that's a reference to the tarnagol. Right. If you right, I don't know. Really, you can. The problem is me. I'm not conversant. I don't know about Eastern medicine, and you're moving then to the West. I'm sorry, the other way around. Anyway, so is that Tarnagol? Levi ikla lahu asra. Okay. So now, one more incident where just lack of communication. Levi went to a town. Asagav lakame amar lay. So a person goes over to Levi. Okay, so a visiting Rosh Yeshiva, Levi comes into a town, right? We just had the Rishon LeZion visiting us here in Boca. So a guy goes over to Levi, he tells him his woes, he tells him his problems. And what does he say to Levi? So he says to him, Kav'an Panaya. So I'm going to translate it for you, because I know the Gemara coming up. And what does he tell Levi? I was robbed. Okay, and what does he want Levi to do about it? I don't know, but v'lo havayada my kamar. Like, but the problem, of course, is that Levi just didn't know what the person was saying to him. He was using local language, which Levi was just simply not familiar with. And so he said, the guy kept saying kavan panaya. Levi's looking at him like I'm nodding his head, like I don't know what he's talking about. Actually, he wasn't nodding his head. Actually, he was being very clear and honest. I don't know what you're talking about. So, also Shah Bay Midrasha. So Levi does a little bit of research and he goes to the local base medrash and he asks them what he's talking about. And Amrulay, they say to him, Gazlan Amalacha. So the person over here was saying that he robbed me. Dichsiv, and then they quote a Pasuk in Malachi. That's a little bit strange, right? Levi didn't know the Pasuk in Malachi. Or maybe had a different understanding of the Pasuk in Malachi, however you want to work that out. But the Pasuk Malachi says, "Hayikva Adam Elokim." Can a person steal from God? No, it's impossible. So anyway, but you see the word Hayikva being used in the Pasuk Malachi, and so good. So Levi now has a better understanding of what the person was saying to him. So Amalei Rava Mibarnish LaRav Ashi. So then the Gemara has a little commentary on the story that we just read. So Levi was a first generation Amora, meaning Levi was contemporaries with Rav and Shmuel and. Right, first generation Amora. And so now we go to the later generations, Rava Mibarnish, Rav Ashi, right? Assuming this is Rav Ashi, right, last generation of the Amoraim, and a little commentary on the Gemara, a little editorial. Ihavai Hasam, Hava Minale Hechi Kavach, Bamai Kavach, Bamai Kavach. So here's what I would have done. Meaning if I were there in Levi's situation where someone comes over to me and says something to me and I didn't know what he was saying, and I didn't even understand him. So what I would have done? Follow-up questions. And with the follow-up questions, then I would have gotten it. Meaning, yeah, at first I wouldn't understand, but I just would have asked him questions like, Hechi kavach, right? How were you kavacht? And b'mai kavacht? And with what were you kavacht? And v'amai kavacht? And what was the motivation? And then I just, in other words, with those follow-up questions, even though at first I didn't understand what he was saying, but I would have gotten it. So the Iu Savar, and now the Gemara goes back to Levi, meaning why didn't Levi do that? Why didn't he ask follow-up questions and just basically try to figure it out using deduction? So Savar Milsa de Isura Kamarle. So he says, look, you don't know what the word kavach means. And it could mean inappropriate behavior. And now the follow-up questions would be really indelicate and immodest, right? In other words, if the word kavach is a reference to illicit relations, then you have follow-up questions on the illicit relations, meaning that it becomes an extremely immodest conversation, and the Gemara says, and you run that risk. So that's what Levi was thinking. So and on top of that, the Gemara doesn't make this point. I guess we can make it, meaning also geneva stas, meaning you give the perception that you understand and you don't understand, and you know, it's a little bit dishonest. I don't want to accuse the later Amoraim of engaging in this kind of dishonesty, but maybe that's also behind Levi's idea that, look, I don't know what it is. Let me just simply say I don't know. Well, Avi Adarabban and Maisei Rugin. Okay? More discussion on words which were unclear to the Chachamim. So far, what the words that we use so far in this discussion have been exclusively words from Tanakh. Right? Every one of them? I think so. Yeah. But you'll tell me I'm wrong later. But in other words, all the words that we didn't know what they meant all came from Tanakh. Now the Gemara is going to turn its attention to words that are found throughout the Mishnayos, where once again we're not totally sure what these words mean. So let's start this discussion. Sorry, finding my place again. Here we go. Lo aviyadu rabbanan mai seirugin. So the rabbis didn't know what the word seirugin meant. Where do we find the word seirugin? So it's a mission coming up in Megillah. Right, we're going to see it a short while from now in the Daf Yomi. The Mishnah says that if you read the Megillah Seirugin, it's okay. So what does that mean? It'd be helpful if we knew what that meant. So Shamul Amta Debei Rabbi. So who's going to be the who's going to help the rabbis? None other than the maidservant of Rabbi. Maidservant of Rabbi is a personality. She comes up a number of times throughout the Gemara. She is. Obviously, her job, her profession was she was the attendant of Rebbe. She was Jewish or not Jewish? I'm not clear about that. I don't know, but either way, it doesn't matter. She lives in the house of Rebbe. She knows things, right? Just by simple osmosis, just living with Rebbe and hearing the conversation of Rebbe, so she knows things. And as we're going to see in just a moment, she knows more than the Chachamim. I'm not saying that as a blanket statement, but she was able to help the Chachamim many times. On points of Torah and definition, translation, and we'll see. She was tough, right? She wasn't a tough woman. So the Gemara says, "Shemula amta debei Rabbi dechazesinu rabbanan dava aile paske paske." So they were walking in like a staggered form, meaning, right? If you have that scene, picture the scene. She's opening the door for the chachamim, she closed it. Then a knock on the door, and the next group of chachamim come in and. This repeats itself, and she's getting annoyed. And Amr Lahu, she says to them, "An matay tam nechnasim seirugin. Enough already. Enough walking in seirugin." So she's using the terminology of the Mishnah to describe how the rabbis are walking in staggered. And so now we go back to the Mishnah Megillah, and now we understand. If you read the Mishnah seirugin, the Megillah seirugin, meaning you read a little bit, you pause. You read a little bit, you pause. So aside from being annoying, but it's okay. Meaning it's an acceptable way to read the Megillah. Not preferable, but acceptable. So the Gemara says, okay, that's one example. Lahavia de Rabbanan mai chalug lagos. Okay, the Chachamim didn't know what is chalug lagos. So where did that come up? So that we saw in Masechta Yuma. Remember, things that we don't have the Kohen Gadol eating before Yom Kippur. Okay? Because we don't want him to have any nocturnal emission that night, which would disqualify him from doing the avoda. So one of the things that he should not be eating is garlic and chalug lagos. And the chachamim are reading this mishnah in Yuma, and again they don't know what's going on. So Yuma chasham ulam to debei rabbi dechazalu gavur dekam mevarer parpechine. So one time the maidservant of Rebbe saw one of the rabbanim, he was sprinkling parpechina. It's a type of vegetable. Rashi gives an old French word to describe it. Either way, so Amrle, so she says to him, "Ad masaya tamifazer chalug logecha." And now she uses the Mishnaic term of chalug logecha. And now, okay, good, they got it. Now they understand the chalug logecha is what they would refer to as parpechina. And now I'm going to try to translate that to English, and I'm useless. But anyway, lo havi yadu rabbanan mai sausala to ramameka paska mishle. Okay, this is not Mishnaic terminology, but still, now salsala to ramameka. What does that mean? So they didn't know. The chachamim just simply didn't know what that meant in mishle. So yumachad shamul amta debei rabbi. So once again, over here in conversation of the maidservant of rabbi, dava amar lahu gavra dava kamahafich b'sa'arei. There was a person who was turning his hair. Right, he had long hair and. Twisting and turning his hair. Who was accused of doing that? Yeah, Yosef. All right, take a look at Rashi. Yosef at 17 years of age, so he was a teenager. So,
he didn't do that.
Right, you're right, correct. So the so Mahapech Basari, so he's just turning his hair. Amrale, and she says to him, and again, she's chastising, Amasai Tamasasa Basarecha. Like enough already, like enough. With being concerned about your hair and your looks, and it's too much. So another example. And oh, by the way, let's go back to the Pasuk of Mishlei just to give a simple understanding of the Pasuk. Now, what does the Pasuk mean? To Sasal Torah Mameka? Meaning, turn not your hair, but turn in the Torah. Meaning, go over the Torah again and again and again and constantly review and turn it over. Usiro Mameka. And you will be elevated. You'll be exalted. Meaning, it's not you learn the Torah and that's it. No, in other words, you just keep going back at it again and again. And you just keep moving up and up. Hashmed. Okay, pasuk in Yeshayahu. They didn't know what it was. So again, they turned to the maidservant of Rabbi to have an amr lechaverta shkule tatisa v'tate besa. Take the broom and sweep the house. So now they go back to the pasuk in Yeshayahu, and now they understand. Hakadosh Baruch Hu saying, I'm gonna sweep you out of Yerushalayim. Lo hava yad rabbanan mai hashlech al Hashem yavcha v'hu yichal kaleka. One last time on this topic. So pasuk in Tehillim, throw on Hakadosh Baruch Hu your yahavech. Okay, what is that? So Amar Rabba Barbachana Yumachad Avazina Bahadei Ahutaya. So here the educator in this case is going to be the Arab merchant. So hava darina tuna. The Amarli, so I was carrying a big load. The Amarli shkol yavech v'shadi agamlai. So he says to me, "Why don't you take it off your own personal body and throw it onto the camel?" So yavech means a burden, a load. So what the pasuk in Tehillim is saying is, take your burden and throw it onto Hakadosh Baruch Hu, meaning unburden your problems to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Tell Hakadosh Baruch Hu what's bothering you, and share your problems with Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of the running dictionary of the Gemara, and many points out go out to Amta Debei Rebbe, the maidservant to Rebbe, who knew many terminologies both in Tanakh and in the Mishnayos. Okay, yeah, that's what you get for being the maidservant to Rebbe. You become that educated, that informed. Shofar Shal Rosh Hashanah. Just give me a favor. Give me the time. Oh, there it is. Okay, good. Shofar Shal Rosh Hashanah Shel Ya'el Pashut Upiv Mitzupeh Zahav. Okay, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah should be of a Ya'el gazelle. Is that a good translation?
A wild goat?
Okay. Fine. You know what? We're going to go back to Ya'el. Okay, it's a gazelle, goat, right? One of the wild animals mentioned in the Torah. It's kosher. We can eat it. Okay. I don't know how many people have eaten it recently, but anyway, but the on Rosh Hashanah, shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'el. Now, by the way, the previous Mishnah said that it could be any, or the horn of any animal. But over here, the Mishnah over here is talking about what was traditionally used. So the shofar of Rosh Hashanah was shel Ya'el pashut. It was straight. Now you'll say to yourself, no, it's not. Okay, good. Hold that thought. That's a good thought. So upiv mitzupeh zahav, and its mouth was plated with gold. Ushechat tzotzos min hatzdadim, and two trumpets were on the side. So shofar in the middle. Imagine three people blowing. Shofar in the middle, two people on the side. So on each side, shofar ma'arich v'chatzotzos mikatzros. So now we blow. The shofar extends, and the trumpets are curtailed. Shemitzvah Sayyam B'Shofar, because the primary mitzvah of the day is with a shofar. Okay? And I guess the chatzos was there serve as accessorize, accentuate, right, to beautify. Uvitanios, now on a fast day, meaning there's a calamity that befalls the Jewish people, so the Chachamim are going to institute a fast day, and we're also going to blow shofar on a fast day. This is the correct week to learn about this. I mean, it's always a good time to learn about it. But Parshas Baaloscha, so you're going to be reading in this week's Parsha. I know after Shavuos, but you're going to be reading in this week's Parsha about the shofars and the occasions that were there blown. So b'shel zecharim. So again, so now we're talking about the horn of a fast day. Shel zecharim. So you take it from a male animal, meaning ram. Kifufim. They're going to be bent. Upiem mitzupa kesef. And the mouthpiece is plated with silver. Ushte chatzorzos be'emtza. And you'll have the two chatzorzos in the middle. Shofar mekatzer v'chatzorzos ma'arichos. The shofar is truncated. And the chatzorzos are extending. Shemitzos ayam v'chatzorzos. Because there, you blow on the chatzorzos. Shava Hayovel Rosh Hashanah L'Tkiyah Brachos. Now, Yovel and Rosh Hashanah are going to be the same regarding the mitzvah of Tkiyah, blowing the shofar, and also Brachos, meaning when we daven the Shemone Esrei, it's going to be the same. We're going to discuss this in great detail when we get to the Gemara tomorrow. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rosh Hashanah Tokim B'Shal Zichar, Rabbi Yovel B'Shal Ye'elim. Rabbi Yehuda says that in Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar of the male ram, and on Yovel, we blow the shofar of the Ya'el. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah and the shofar of Yovel are not the same shofar. And again, all that is going to be discussed in detail later on. Let's just do a little bit of Gemara. Amar Rav Levi, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom Kippurim b'kfufim v'shel kol Hashanah b'pshutim. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Levi that the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah is to blow using a horn that is bent. And that's true regarding a Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And the rest of the year, a straight shofar. Gemara notes, that's somewhat problematic because in the Mishnah we learn the exact opposite. V'hatanan shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel yal pashut hudam. I'm sorry, shel yal pashut. What about our Mishnah that says that on Rosh Hashanah you blow a straight shofar? So the Gemara says, hudam or kiatana. So the Gemara says he follows a different Tana, meaning we're not going to go with our Mishnah, he's going to go with another Braisa. The Tanya will not have a Braisa, Rav Yehuda Omer, Rosh Hashanah, how you token b'shel zecharet, kefufim, uve yovlos b'shel ye'elim. So that according to Rav Yehuda, on Rosh Hashanah, you blow with a ram's horn that is bent, and on Yovel, you blow using the horn of the Ya'el. Wild goat, gazelle. Okay. V'lei me'ochzak Rav Yehuda. Now, just simply say the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Now, it'd be somewhat misleading because if he just simply said the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, I would have thought that's true by Rosh Hashanah and that's true also by Yovel as well. Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says that's what's coming to teach us. That no, the halacha is not going like, yes, the halacha is going like Rav Yehuda, but moreover, according to the Braisa, that on Rosh Hashanah you're going to be blowing a ram's horn, which is bent. And on Yovel, you blow that horn of Ya'el. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. We'll spend more time on this point tomorrow.